Welcome to the Never Not Creative podcast. I'm Andy Wright, and today I'm very happy to welcome Nasya Kamrat, CEO and co-founder of Faculty, and Aaron Wolf, CCO and partner at Faculty. Faculty are a certified women-owned spatial storytelling agency that creates human-centric experiences for global brands. Thank you very much for joining us. How are you? Nasya, to begin with, how are you doing?
I'm good. I am glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
That's brilliant. And Aaron, you look fantastically set up in like a, you do look like you're about to come on the radio and announce War of the Worlds to us.
Yeah, you're seeing my full podcaster setup, and I can even do my podcaster voice, my sort of like gentle podcast voice with all the bells and whistles.
Oh, we could go Roman Mars.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Well, we'll look now. Here's the thing, Andy. We could. We actually could.
Excellent. So, we've actually got lots of things to talk about, and we have been chatting for I think a couple of months now about trying to run this episode and this podcast. I'm gonna jump straight in. Actually, I'd love to learn a little bit more about Faculty. There's a very specific statement in that kind of opening. A certified women-owned spatial storytelling agency. For you, Nasya, what is the significance around being able to go, like, this is a women-owned business?
Yeah, so I come from a traditional agency background. I've been working in the space for, since my early 20s. And when I started Faculty 10 years ago, I started with my co-founder, Josh, who's still very much involved. And actually it was funny because he is Taiwanese, I'm a woman, and in the US you can sort of choose if you want to be like minority owned or woman owned. You can't be both. You have to like make a choice. And for a variety of reasons we went with the woman owned certification. And it's important for us, I think, and sort of holistically as a company, to be able to tell good stories, which is in our essence, we are a brand storytelling agency. That's what we do. We tell brand stories. Mm-hmm. And the best way to tell an authentic story is to have representation of all the people who are going to sort of be part of that story, whether they're the consumer or the brand itself or sort of anyone who's going to touch that brand has to be inclusive. You have to be able to tell stories that, include in my case, like half the population are women, and we should be able to include them in the story. And if we can't sort of be able to sort of have representation for that, then we're not going to be able to do our jobs well. Mm-hmm. So being women-owned, I think, particularly in the U.S. and being an agency, it's definitely an agency that works in sort of technology and content and all of that, like there are not that many women-owned agencies. And so being able to say, no, this is something that we're proud of, that we're going to be representative of, a population that is often underrepresented in agency world, in marketing, was very important to us.
You've also taken that a step further, I was reading, with the launch of Kamuna.
Kamuna actually was born out of the pandemic. I was on a call with a, Fortune 50 brand, and we were chatting, and they love our work, and they really wanted to work with us, but it was at the height of 2020, and they were like, oh, well, we have to like reach our like goals of being able to only, we had to have this many women owned and this many black owned and this many, and they had these boxes to check of like how many agencies that were being represented for the work mm-hmm. that they do. And I had this sort of epiphany where I was like, the fact that they're separating us into these individual boxes, right? That like, they're going to say, oh, well, we have to get X percentage of women-owned agencies. And once they reach that quota, they don't care anymore mm-hmm. Because the hashtag of the season isn't there. I realized the strength of us sort of coming together as underrepresented founders. There's something sticky there. So I, along with a couple other colleagues, started Kamuna. And Kamuna is a co-op network of independent specialist agencies that are all led by underrepresented founders that help sort of take the place of the sort of traditional holding company model. And so, you know, holding companies generally call agencies like ours anyway to do half the work that they do. But this way, you're working directly with the agencies who are going to be doing the work. You're working with underrepresented voices and underrepresented founders. And we're no longer being a singular box. We check all the boxes because we're representative of all the various underrepresented communities, and we're no longer competing against one another. We're working together, which actually makes us no longer the minority because there's more of us when you kind of put us all together, which I think is really awesome.
Yeah, that's great. So, Aaron, how's this kind of culture for you? Obviously, you know, we're the two white men on the on the podcast, so let's put it out there. But yeah, so what's it like being involved with faculty and knowing that things like this are that happening? Must feel good, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look, when your partner says, like, we're in the middle of a pandemic and everybody's strapped and exhausted and pushed to the limit, and I'm going to start like a co-op agency that's going to run alongside of our company, and we're going to also take care of our clients, and also, you know, it was sort of like a, yeah, okay, if there's anybody that can do it, it's Nasia. And it definitely feels good. It's a lot, right? It's a lot of work. And it's the kind of thing that if it was anything else, if it was like, I want to also do a startup that sells fancy doggy biscuits or whatever, I probably would have said, you're out of your mind. But the way Nasia put it is exactly right. This is an opportunity to make right a wrong that has been going on for so long. I play a very small role in the, like, in Kamuna being what it is, but I'm really proud that it exists, and I'm really proud that my agency gets to be part of it. It's an amazing project.
And so we've brought up the holding companies a couple of times already. We're only five or six minutes in. So I've certainly been in a situation as well where I've worked for most of the holding companies, and I think, you know, the less and less time I spend not with them, I think, look, let's face it, the better I feel. I mean, obviously, there's a certain amount of being able to, you know, create your own destiny. There's the benefits of holding companies that, you know, yes, there's that great big safety net in the bank account, which means if you're having a bad month, it doesn't matter too much. But what are the other benefits that you've kind of seen from sort of pulling away and, you know, being the masters of your own destiny from that perspective?
You know, I come from a holding company background. I worked at the big shops for my early career. And, you know, the challenge I always had was I had incredible colleagues, brilliant, brilliant creatives and strategy folks, and who really wanted to do good work. But in the end, you are beholden to the bottom line of a holding company, which is like owned by some like French dude in like white French dude who you've never met. Right. And so in the end, you're beholden to sort of this sort of idea. Right. And certainly going off on our own and starting our own thing, like there takes a certain amount of like stupidity, ego, I don't know what you call it, like something of like being able to go and do this thing. But I also realized that like the way the holding company model works, right. The way employees are treated or historically treated, right? So, you know, I was working in those agencies in the early 2000s, right? It's very different, or it's trying to be different now, maybe. You know, I think there was a better way to work. I think there was a more efficient way to work. I think there was a more empathetic way to work. I think there was a more way to work we're doing right by each other, by, you know, the people who we work with, our clients, that we weren't just, you know, an hourly rate card and trying to get the most at the end of the year. Like, everyone spend all the money because the end of the year is coming. We got to build the clients. Like, that never sat well for me. And then I also just realized like there is so much work to be done, but they had this like false idea that there was like scarcity in work, scarcity of seats at a table, right? Like, particularly as like a woman in advertising, like there's only so many titles that you can get, and you had to like step on each other to get there. And that just like, mm-hmm. was the antithesis of how I was raised, of the type of company I wanted to be a part of. And so, you know, I left the big agency world. I freelanced for a little while. And then I met my founding partner, Josh, at a branding agency. And I think I knew it for like six weeks. And I was like, let's do this. And he goes, okay. And then I left that company because I was about to take their sort of main design director. And yeah, and then, you know, that was, you know, a little over 10 years ago. And we just started and we had, you know, full transparency, no idea what we were doing. And we're like, let's do this. And we figured it out along the way. And I think we sort of built the plane while we were flying it and brought the right people along as we were building it and took the lessons that we learned from working at the larger shops of who we don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And knowing who we don't want to be allowed us to become who we wanted to be. And we're still learning and figuring it out and making mistakes. We're human.
We might come back to that, I think, in a little bit as well, because I've certainly been in that situation as well. And you go, no, we're going to do it completely different. In fact, where they zig, we'll zag, we'll be completely uncomparable. And then you get in it and you go, okay, yeah, so we still do have to do that, don't we? Or we've still got to try and do this. And all of those things that kind of go, okay, yeah, no, actually, it wasn't completely, completely wrong. We still have to be able to run a business. Now, Aaron, sorry, I picked the time when you got up.
It's fine. My 9-year-old just walked out. I mean, this is the reality of podcasting and working in the pandemic moment. My 9-year-old just walked into the room and said, Daddy, my teeth feel uneven. In one ear, I'm hearing, you know, like the trials and tribulations of being a woman founder and like figuring out like how to make, you know, real the work that you want to be doing. And then on the other hand, my teeth feel uneven, sort of, you know, the highs and lows of existence. Sorry, what was your question?
Well, what are you going to do about that, though?
Embrace it, man. That's right. That's, I think, I mean, like, you know, honestly, to answer your question, I don't know what you were about to ask, but like the truth is that like the thing that I think the benefit that we get from by not being part of a holding company, by being able to be masters of our own destiny, is we get to be like whatever percentage more human than we were like before. Like I don't come from a traditional background at all. I'm like the manic pixie dream girl of the relationship. I come from like a film and storytelling world. And I was always sort of resistant to like the straight and narrow and having a full-time staff job and being like a normal person, because I didn't want my life to look regular in any way, but I wanted to be able to do work that mattered and work that mattered to me. And so whether you're a freelancer or you're working for a big holding company, you often have to make these compromises about what kind of creative work you're willing to do, right? You just take the job that's in front of you. Mm-hmm. And here came this opportunity. Nasia was like, come join my company. And then let's also create this cooperative where we can be the destiny. We can be the masters of our own destiny. And it's like, okay, we can do work that we care about for clients that we care about, but then also like, if my kid walks into the room and has like a meltdown in the middle of like the day, like that's real. That's the realness of life. And it affords us a certain amount of leeway to just be normal and human for each other.
And I guess it's good for you, especially that you've been able to come from, because we brought, you know, freelancers and specialists as well into an agency environment before. And it's not always the easiest kind of integration because you haven't had that big agency team craziness sort of thing going on. How's that? It's probably been better for you as a result, but you haven't perhaps got as much to compare it by. How's that been for you?
It's a learning experience. You know, the learning curve continues. I'm still learning. I'm still learning all of the time how to do things more effectively, how to be a better partner, how to be a better manager, how to be a better creative. But I'm really grateful, you know, it used to be that I would parachute into a problem and I would solve it and then I would leave, you know, and like, if I burnt down the house while I solved it, it didn't matter, you know, or if I left behind some sort of like, hey, what if you did X, you know, great, that might feel good, but that was on to the next thing. I was a freelancer with faculty for almost 10 years before Nasia convinced me to be a full-time employee. So I watched the way they approached problems. I watched the way they she and Josh were approaching new clients, and I watched the work that we got to do together. And I said, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to be part of this. And there has been a learning curve. And if you talk to my colleagues, some of them might say that I'm not learning fast enough. And some will say that I'm learning just well. But the work is good, right? And the people are good. And so we take the good with the bad.
Yeah. Nasia, often we want lots of different people with different backgrounds and different kind of specialisms even in our business. But then it can be actually quite difficult once they get there that they don't fit in with the idea of how an agency works or the processes and the culture that you've created. How does that work out at faculty?
Well, I will say that, we embrace the fact that we all come from different backgrounds. So, I have, before I was in the agency world, I worked in theater. I wanted to be a director in theater, and then I needed health insurance. And so I started working in advertising, as you do. My founding partner had a art background, and he comes from the video art world and then was running a studio at a branding agency. And so he is very much in the sort of the maker side of things, the execution side of things. And when we met Aaron, he had this incredible background for storytelling, and he comes from the moth storytelling world and the film world. And it allowed us, by having these sort of varied backgrounds, and then our whole team is we have people from all sorts of places, and I think that allows us to not approach things how you would normally approach most things. And so I think that actually makes the work better, because there is no, this is how an agency should work. This is how we work. Mm-hmm. And we're always evolving that because we want to be working better for each other and for our clients. But what I've learned is a lot of what not to do along the way. And that's what I've taken into the agency. How we become better ourselves is what we're constantly figuring out and evolving and sort of pushing towards. And so I think the fact that we're all from different backgrounds allows us to be more effective.
What's the reaction to a lot of this? There's a very strong belief and purpose clearly around the agency. What's the reaction from clients? So I mean, when you create yourself like that, you often end up attracting the types of people that you want to attract, obviously, but then sometimes a few can sort of slip through the net. Has that happened? And also the other thing I guess I'm interested in is from the status quo, the agencies that aren't like that, are you the upstart in the corner, or how does it work?
We win business. You probably had no business winning, because we do things differently, and we're sort of they come to us because they don't want to do the normal. I don't think they're how do we get pushed outside of our comfort zone? And that's why we usually get approached. If you want to do a rinse and repeat, we're probably not the agency for you. And we want our clients to push us back, right? So the thing about a relationship is this sort of constant back and forth and challenging and making each other better. And so I think, clients who come to us, we're pretty clear with who we are. They know what they're getting themselves into. So either they're for it or they're not. And if they're not, then go to the other shops. That's great. We don't want to work with brands who are not interested in sort of going outside of what the normal stories are or their normal conversations are. So I think we've had some really incredible relationships because the sort of relationship building that we do, and that we seek clients who want to be, who want to do the weird stuff, who want to do the strange stuff, who want to do the outside the box stuff, who want, an agency that's not a bunch of ex-agency people who all came from the same place building the same thing somewhere else. We have film weirdos and, art folks and all sorts of people kind of coming together under this umbrella that is just creating interesting creative work.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's really important that I don't think, I think sometimes we get into a room because we're the women-owned agency and part of Kamuna, and But I think we get the gigs because of what Nasya said earlier, which is that the work is better when you include more voices and when you center more points of view and when you are able to kind of like understand a broader spectrum of experience, right? And so I think for the most part, we've been really lucky with having really long-lasting relationships with a really wide range of clients who basically, I think, look at us and say like, yeah, their work is good. And I hope that they care why the work is good, but I think they mostly care that the work is good, you know? And I think that's the big thing for me.
What happens when they don't fit? Like, it's great when you put yourself out there as something different, but then you get a client that goes, yes, we want different. And then you show them what different looks like. And it might not be a great fit. Has that happened? What do you do?
Yeah, it's 100% happened. So it's happened even in the RFP process. If something doesn't align with our values, like we meet as a team and say, hey, is this something you want to move forward with? And if like we get icked out by it, we're not going to do it because you can't believe in the work that you're doing. You're not going to do good work. And I also think, you know, we have had relationships end with clients because they wanted the rinse and repeat, even though they wanted to be, they're like, oh no, we have to do something different. And then really what they wanted us to check all the boxes of what a launch plan looks like and blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. I mean, we could do that and we could do that successfully, but that doesn't feed us creatively, I don't think.
Yeah.
Sometimes you date someone and it doesn't work out and you're like, you know what? Let's just be friends. And that's super cool too. And I think we've had those moments. We've also been married to a couple of our brand partners for like nearly a decade. So I think that it goes both ways.
Hmm. Have you ever had to have that kind of awkward conversation when something comes up that clearly isn't aligned? So it might be, I don't know, a throwaway comment in a meeting and then you go, oh no, that's not us. We at the moment at Never Not Creative, we've been working with a organization called Fuck the Cupcakes, which is we sort of both launched initiatives around International Women's Day. So we've got a platform that's Never Not International Women's Day, which we absolutely should invite you both to put a submission onto. But it's basically it's talks from inspiring women and supportive men around the world around the challenges that women face in the workplace. Fuck the Cupcakes went straight out there and said, fuck the cupcakes. And we've actually also been involved with them and collaborating on the issues around misogyny in the workplace. And so there's a short film coming out, which actually sort of points out office style, all of the things that, you know, go probably seen but not addressed in the office. Because it's so important for you both to work in this place that does have authenticity around its values, and so therefore you do have to kind of live it 100% of the time, that I'm assuming there are times when you go, well, actually it's hard, but we're going to have to call this out. Have there been experiences of that? How do you handle it?
That's a tough question. And it's a tough question because on one hand, I have to sort of like have to be honest with myself, right? Like on one hand, my initial response is we've been really lucky that everyone that we've worked with has been really righteous and awesome. And we haven't had to have those really hard conversations. And then immediately I'm thinking, oh, that's got to be bullshit. I'm like really doing an inventory. Honestly, I think the answer is I don't know. I think the answer is we have been lucky with on the client side. And I think we're a work in progress on our internal team. I think our internal team is mostly women. You know, from a partner level, like I know that I'm not always the kindest or most empathetic to Nasya that I could be. And I know that there, you know, there's room to grow, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's the clean answer to your question is like, by knowing that there's always room to grow, we sort of keep an eye out on that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. We have been very lucky that like we haven't had to deal with it head on yet. Mm. It's coming. I'm sure it's coming. As we grow, as we work more and more and more with more and more people, it'll come and we'll be tested.
I'm sure that if you asked, you know, an employee from 10 years ago who we are, it's very different than an employee of today. And I think that just is sort of representative of where we want to be going. And I know, you know, I think we have been lucky with clients. I think I don't know offhand of a thing that's happened where sort of everyone's been, Aaron's still thinking, I'm looking at him now and he's still under like, was there a time? But I know internally, like we, you know, people are human and we make mistakes. And I think we own up to the moments where we aren't being awesome, or we do something that, you know, isn't what we, and I think it's just sort of taking those moments and learning from them and, you know, just owning up to the fact that we're all learning this together and learning how to be human together and learning how to work together in a world that's weird and crazy and crazier than it's ever been in my lifetime. And so I think it's sort of just knowing that, like, and also forgiving. I'm sure I have not been a great partner at times as well. And so just also forgiving one another for those moments of just being human and all of that.
I think it's hard sometimes, like when you nail your colors to a mast so kind of, you know, strongly and say, look, this is who we are, that then there's a feeling that you have to be 100% that all the time. And so that's why things like, you know, that question or these kind of conversations in particular get a bit awkward, because they're like, oh my God, but have we? But I like the way that you talked about how we're all work in progress. And, you know, it's sometimes, I guess, the challenge is that you can feel like, or people may take that as an excuse, or you can take it as actually, yes, we're genuinely trying to do the right thing, but we won't always.
I would like to say very publicly and clearly, like, I have exercised my privilege at faculty probably innumerable times, right? But I would also like to think that I have been open to hearing when I have done it. Mm. And when the corrective has come my way, I have heard it. And I think, look, there's a Jewish saying that goes, neither are you expected to complete the work in your lifetime, but you are not allowed to forgo your part in it, right? It's not an excuse to just be human, but it is a process, right? Like, mm-hmm. It is, you can't, it is bullshit to say, hey, we're gonna fly this flag and we're gonna live and die by it, because then you get into a really dangerous situation where you start ignoring the dirty stuff, the mm-hmm. the messy stuff, right? It's a work in progress. Like, mm-hmm. have we called out a client that made an off color comment? I don't know that a client has, but like, have I smiled when like a colleague said something that was like just close enough to like ignore? Definitely.
Yeah.
Will I tomorrow? I hope not. If somebody points it out to me, will I say, oh shit, that's important for me to hear? 100%. And I think what we can do as owners of the company, as partners and as colleagues, is to build a culture within our agency and in our cooperative that allows for space for voices to say, hey, that sucked, and here's why. And it's not always a direct thing, right? It's not always like somebody said something ugly or somebody made another person feel bad. It could just be, hey, your voice was too loud in that meeting. Mm-hmm. Got it. Cool. You know? And I think we're getting there. It's a work in progress, but we're getting there. And if we hadn't raise that flag about who we were, I don't think we'd even be having the conversation. I think we'd just be like, yeah, business as usual.
Nazia, I'm guessing that obviously you said how things have got better in the world over the last, you know, well, let's say 10 years, just for a nice round number. But how do you look, kind of, do you look back at what you will have experienced earlier on in your career and what you see now in terms of like what you thought was okay at the time, what wouldn't be okay now, and how do you help people coming, like younger people coming into the team, or into the industry with those kind of, you know, those challenges?
Yeah, I think it goes back to, like, you know, the sort of the dirty laundry aspect of this is like, mm-hmm. things haven't gotten better. We're just talking about them more. Yeah. Right. So like, I don't think we fixed nearly anything. Right. I think the days of like walking into a conference room and, you know, back in like 2003 and like something totally horrific happening, whether it be something being said or drugs being spread across the table, you know, like there's a lot of things happened in the early 2000s that I think have changed. But I do think that we haven't fixed the problem. We're just now saying, no, talk about it and acknowledge where you're fucking up or where you're messing up. And so, I think we have, you know, when we're talking about works in progress, I think, you know, nothing has been solved. We haven't made the industry more equitable. We're terrible at making the industry more equitable. The industry is entirely inequitable. It is not diverse. It is a shitty industry in so many ways. But in 2004, we weren't talking about how shitty it was. Now we're talking about it. And now we're saying there is a space in which you can talk about it and you can sort of reflect internally and be like, what is my part in this? And so I think with the new folks coming into the space and into the industry, I think there is a candor that wasn't around when I started in the industry where you could talk about the hard stuff, or if something made you uncomfortable, you could raise your hand and say, that sucked. That made me uncomfortable. Like, why would you say that? Or I don't want to work on this client because it doesn't align with my values. That's the difference. I think to say that we've solved anything is giving us as humans far too much credit. I think we have just said, oh no, we have to solve some shit. And now we're trying to figure out desperately how to solve it and be just better humans to one another in the sort of like experience of work. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that is sort of a part that felt strong.
I really like that. And I think it's easy to mistake noise for progress, right? Like, just because we're talking about something doesn't mean that it's getting better. But I think also for the people that don't necessarily experience those challenges to their, you know, to the degree that others do, it is that you can forsake, or you can think about how noise is progress. And I think, you know, that's a great point that you just made. I think we have it from everything from, you know, diversity and inclusion, but also to mental health and the stigma around those types of challenges. Just because we're talking about it doesn't mean that the systems that have produced it have got any better. So I think it's a great way of kind of framing it. On that solution part, so I'm going to come back to what you were talking about earlier around, you know, like some, like you'll get onto pitch lists, for example, because of, you know, the makeup of the agency and women owned and all of those kind of things, which sort of leads me to tokenism and quotas. And where do you land with that? Like, is that good progress? Does it mean that, you know, it people that weren't getting opportunities are now, or is there a better way?
This is hard because I think, you know, we are a women-owned business and we did that strategically because it would get us into rooms that we would normally not be invited into. Mm. And so we are certainly leaning into the system that's in place. But I do think, I mean, part of the reason why Kamuna was started was because of that, right? Of like, we are not just a quota. We're not just a number. We're not just a thing that you can send your board or your investors at the end of the year saying, look how much we give a shit, right? The world that we want to get to is we're being inclusive of different voices because it's better for the work, it's better for the world, it's better for us understanding each other as humans. Mm-hmm. I think we have a long way to go. And so I think that there is a moment where we do need to get more people in the room, right? Because we can't start that step of change until we get more voices. But I do think that how procurement at brands have happened historically is 100% about tokenism. Mm. And that's what we need to change. We need to say, oh no, we're going after diverse agencies or diverse partners because it's going to make our work suck less, right? Mm-hmm. We're actually going to do better work if we have diverse voices, not like what is right now with procurement of the, well, right now they need to hire, it's International Women's Month, and we got to hire X amount of women agencies to satisfy our thing so that we know in March we hired X amount of women agencies and we could blast our Twitter and everyone will say, good job, brand X, for giving a shit. That needs to change. And so I think we're on the agency side. We know what we can do to be better in the room for our brand partners. But I think brands have a lot of work to do. And the big holding companies have a ton of work to do if they want to continue. Like, you can't just hire, you know, a high level person, woman or black person, whatever. You can't do that and say, oh, we just now all of our DEI issues are checked off because we now have a C-suite person who is not a white dude. So
Aaron, a lot of this must help with doing the work, I think. Like, a good friend of Never Not Creative, Samita Maharaj, she always talks about how there are all of these issues, but actually in the positions that we are as storytellers and designers and copywriters and creators, that we actually end up, even if brand X wasn't, 100% squeaky clean, we actually have the opportunity to create work for them that means we use their voice and the power of their media to be able to get better messages out and to, cast better films or to, whatever it is. Do you feel like you are able to kind of do that even more with faculty and with those kind of values behind you?
I truly believe that in storytelling, there's this sort of like weird alchemy. The more specific and the more kind of like laser focused a story is on an individual's experience, the more universal it becomes. The more you're able to tell a specific story about a specific person, about a specific center, a specific voice, the more you're able to then somehow connect that voice and that experience to a way wider audience. I'm not sure why it works. I just know that it works. And so for me, working with faculty, working with the team that I have, if I just did that myself, it would just be my voice, right? It would just be my sheltered experience. It would just be, it would be the same over and over again. But we get to center all these different voices. We get to hear other unique perspectives. That allows our work to get really, really, really specific in various ways and get really impactful in other ways. You see it in the work that we do. I've over and over again, I'm sort of like find myself explaining a thing that we've done for one of our clients, and the response invariably is, oh, that's so cool, I wish I could work on that too. And all that is that we just found a voice. We just found a different person's voice and let them tell their story and connected that story to the brand and figured out a way to make that real, right? So yes, it has made my job easier, but it's also made it more gratifying because it's also, I can sit with my team and I can say like, yeah, but this is what we should be talking about. And the team says, dude, you're a white guy with this one very specific experience. What if we did this? And they're always right, right? I'm oversimplifying. I'm usually right.
that we should definitely send as the meme to the team and see what see what your team says about that, Aaron. I think you'll get some.
Honestly, like I love it. Like I love hearing like you know, one of my colleagues say, like, so, hey, by the way, I've just listened to you talk about what you care about. Would you like to hear about what I care about this? And when I say yes, it's always something I had never thought of. And it's always more specific and more interesting than what was rattling around in my head. And I don't think, I think if I worked in a traditional agency, I think the voices would be mine. It would be much similar to mine, right? And that's important. That's where the good work comes from, is by getting other voices into the picture.
Yeah. And you've got to have that really inclusive culture, right? Like, it's all great bringing people in, but if you haven't given them the opportunity to kind of bring all of themselves in or to be able to speak up in the right way, then it's sort of, it's lost, isn't it?
And because, like, my team might listen, it happens in our agency as well. It does, right? But it's, again, it's about, like, being able to recognize when it does and then trying to correct for it quickly, as opposed to moving on and being like, no, but we've ticked all the boxes and we're fine.
So
it doesn't matter that it's just my voice being heard. You know?
And I think it's also keeping each other honest too. Like, the amount of times that Aaron, after a meeting, will say, hey, Nasia, you dominated that conversation. Like, sit back and shut up and listen. Like, or I say that to him and I'm saying, oh, right. Like, being able to, like, hear that and saying, oh, like, you know, because I talk a lot. I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things, and often am one of the loudest voices in the rooms. And I need to be reminded sometimes that we have to sort of keep each other in check on, like, how do we be better team members and colleagues and managers and partners to our clients. And that is just sort of like us sort of keeping each other in check as well. And sort of like, I mean, I might get, like, a little annoyed and grumble after Aaron will say something like that. but then I'm like, oh, right, he's right. Damn it, he's right. You know, sort of being, I think it just comes into, like, the letting ourselves be human as well. I think it's really hard as a leader in a company to be human and to sort of be vulnerable. And I know it's really challenging for me, particularly with, like, where I come from and, like, the agency background that I had is, like in 2005, nobody cried in the bathroom in 2005 and talked about their feelings. You just didn't do that. Like, you wouldn't last in the agency world if you did. And so I need to always sort of constantly be keeping myself in check that, like, that's how I grew up in this world. That is not what the world should be.
Yeah. I think that's so important. I think there's so many times, unfortunately, that people in leadership positions can go, well, that's what I had to do. And, you know, or that's what you, and therefore that's what you have to do. Or worse, is not as bad as when I was in that position, right? And we have to break that cycle of some of the shitty experiences that were, you know, going around, and still do. I've seen and spoken to a lot of agencies where, like, they're driving people back into the office because they believe it's so important for creativity. Where do you land?
I think there is an absolute benefit to being together. I think it helps. I do. I think it really helps the work. However, you can't undo the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And you can't undo the fact that people have built their lives around 15 minutes here and there where they're at home to help smooth over some other bump. And there's an unbelievable toll in saying, hey, you got to be back at the office from 9 to 5. That's a hidden toll. It might mean that now you have to invite a person in to be a babysitter for your kid who you're not so sure about their health status or their protocols. It might mean that suddenly you have to invest X amount of money that's going to make you uncomfortable for whatever other reason, right? There's so many. We're just beginning to figure this all out, right? So I think for me, it's just, we talk, we listen to each other, we figure out what works for each other, we figure out if it's safe or comfortable, and we figure out ways to, like, do well for each other. On the other side of all of this, the other day I had a conversation with a colleague who was moving from Brooklyn, where she had been hired, to South Jersey for a period of time. And she said to me very clearly, hey, in my last place of work, it would have been forbidden to even talk about your kid, let alone have your kid walk into the frame We were just, we had to pretend that it didn't happen. We had to pretend that this life was like in parentheses from the rest of our world, that like the work was the most important thing. And she was like, I can do my best work for you because I know that it's okay for you to see the mess, that I can still do the good stuff for you, even if there's some mess at the edge. I think that's unlocking untold levels of creativity in the field right now. And I think to like run away from that is insane. It's not just like inhuman. It's actively trying to get worse work because people's lives are messy and they need to find ways in which they can do the work within the mess.
I was like, oh, I'm going to sum this up. And then like you actually summed it up because I know this is what you do. But you're like coming back to unlocking creativity. If we started to think about that a lot more, we would maintain or in fact improve some of the things that we put in place for the people that we work with. And we'd allow them to make choices that can unlock their creativity. I had a meeting late last night that, you know, sometimes you get to the end of the day and you don't feel like doing another meeting. And I said, look, can I do this while I take the dog for a walk? And that meeting was an hour and 20 minutes. Luckily with that person, those meetings are usually always fun. So that's okay. But it's just so much better, like, because also the time flies and I'm walking the dog and we're getting into much more important and also like expansive conversations because of the frame of mind that you're in, rather than end of day, another Zoom call. And you're just not going to unlock, you know, the things that you would if you were just out and about. And sometimes I think like what you said as well, like maybe a good 20, 30 minutes of those meetings are just, how do I get my latte art right? Or how do I, you know, like the stuff that isn't essential to work, but is essential to the work because it's the stuff that's going to help you be more creative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But
I would love you, Aaron, to make a meme. Feels like life working at home. And I think you even like summed it up as like tokenism, culture. How do we do better storytelling? My teeth are uneven. You've got to make that. It's got to be made.
Equally important, right?
And I will say that there is enough like kids and dogs and cats and like whatever in our within our company. I will say there has not been a single Zoom ever in the 2.5 years we've been doing this that there hasn't been a kid or a dog or a cat or a thing coming in and making everyone giggle for a moment. Yeah. And I think that actually like makes things better. Like I love when Aaron's kids come into the thing because I'm like, oh, he's so much bigger than he was 2 months ago last time he came into frame. So
imagine how boring we'd be if we weren't humans, you know, like and how boring the work would be. Anybody could be just a sort of stiff edge, right? It's let in the mess and something magical will happen. You just have to tolerate the mess part.
Yeah.
And
well, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. I feel like there may even be another podcast in the making because there's a couple of things I didn't get to that I'd love to get your thoughts on. So watch this space. Maybe we'll be back. But thank you very much for both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much to Nasya and Aaron. There's been a lot going on at Never Not Creative. We've got a brand new website. Go check out nevernotcreative.org. The Mentally Healthy 2022 survey, if you listen to this quickly after release, is still running for one more week. So if you haven't had your say, please go and check out bit.ly/mentallyhealthy2022. And you better take the survey, and it informs a lot of the work that we do in the mental health space. We have a lot of things coming up that we're launching. Never Not Creative Circles is getting revamped. We have circles for mental health. We have circles for men who want to support women better in work. And we also have a mentor program coming up for Black, Indigenous and people of color. Creatives that are looking to get into the industry that can be connected with midweight and senior kind of director level creatives, and that's a program called Here Now, which is coming soon as well. So details all on nevernotcreative.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be back very soon with a bonus episode of Creativity in Football, our series on men's mental health, and also a whole series on the differences in creative careers between men and women, and the rise of different creative directors and the experiences that they've had between them and how they differ and how they're the same. So please keep an eye out for those. We are going to get a little bit more regular with the podcast soon, and there's plenty more coming. Last but not least, thank you to Streamtime, who sponsor and support Never Not Creative. We couldn't do it without them. Project management for healthier creative businesses. Thanks for listening.